This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
I hadn't been to a horse race since I was like six.
And Brock Rom.
I have not been to a horse race there, but I've been inside Churchill Downs and I've been inside your control room.
What's it like to work at a horse racing complex that is steeped in tradition and pageantry? Emily Shepherd, Director of Design and Creative at Churchill Downs, is here to share her experience in sports versus corporate, making last-minute changes, and how to use race day to source fan feedback.
All right, I'm rolling. Let's do 17.
Whew. All right.
We'll see.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack, so if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today we're joined by Emily Shepherd, and Emily is the Director of Design and Creative at Churchill Downs Racetrack. And so we're going to get into horse racing a little bit today, which I'm very excited about. But Emily, you've been both at the racetrack, but also in corporate a little bit as well. So maybe we'll get your perspective in a couple different areas there. But the first thing that jumped out to me, and I'm very interested in, is working in sports. We all hear about, you know, we all get the, oh, well, what do you do in the off season? Well, I'm curious to hear from you what you do for 364 days a year, because your only job is, you know, that one day a year at the racetrack, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Nothing else going on at all, you know, the rest of the year. It's interesting. I always say that, the nature of the Kentucky Derby is a little different with a lot of other sports in that, like, for example, the Super Bowl, you know, all of those other kind of events happen at the end of their sports season when the Kentucky Derby, for us at least, kicks off our season. It is the like fifth race day of the year. We do a Derby week. So we kick off Derby week with an opening night racing event. And then we race, I think like five days up until Derby. So and we have events throughout that whole week. So we just kind of start like with the biggest thing. And then we kind of marathon through. The spring meet lasts for 2 months. So that usually goes through the end of June, sometimes into the first weekend of July, depending on the year. And then we are actually in our last weekend right now of our September race meet. And that's usually about 3 weeks long. And then we do a fall race meet, which is just pretty much the whole month of November through Thanksgiving weekend. So we have about 70, give or take, every year it varies a little bit. We have about 70 race days a year. So we do 70 programs a year, which comes out of the, under the purview of the graphics department here. So that keeps us pretty busy, you know, while we're racing. And then through our race meets, we have other events. So we have family day, we have night racing, we have some kind of evening twilight racing events, you know, mixed in with all of our regular kind of like day of race stuff. And then the summer, you know, kind of in the off season, I suppose, you know, that's usually a lot of working on sales materials. And then, you know, we've really focused heavily on moving Derby planning up as, you know, early as we can, because it does with all the other meets, it catches up on you pretty quickly. You're like, wait, I just did this. So, you know, trying to think ahead as much as possible when it comes to that stuff. So definitely busy all year round. And then, you know, pretty much the back half of the year through the first quarter of the year, every year is leading up to Derby prep. So it's, you know, we don't really have, it used to kind of slow down a little bit, but it feels like more and more, we're just kind of like plowing through, through the summer and into the meet every year. So it's nice. I enjoy having benchmarks, kind of what's the next thing, you know? So, and I tend to thrive under pressure. So, and there's a lot of it when you kind of have one event after the other, leading up. So there's not a lack of work to do at all, you know, outside of Derby, because we kind of start with that and just keep rolling.
I think that's pretty interesting that you kind of talk about like your Super Bowl being at the start of the season. you know, how do you use then the off season to prepare for that? And do you like it being at the start? Because I know for me, you know, when our biggest events are at the end of the year, sometimes I'm so burned out that trying to create this like biggest and best stuff of the year is hard. You know, is it nice having that at the start of the year where you have an off season ish to work on it?
Yeah, I think that is nice because you're not kind of dealing with the daily race stuff, which is pretty turnkey, you know, kind of as each race day goes on. It does quite honestly get challenging, you know, towards the end of the September spring meet, you're just like, how long have we been doing this? It's been going on forever. So, and then you don't want to, you know, you're so focused on Derby that you don't want to neglect, you know, for us, a big race day is actually Mother's Day. It's a very highly attended day. And that typically falls the weekend right after Derby. So you kind of have to keep thinking ahead, like Derby's not the only thing, you know, it's a big thing. It's the biggest thing that we do really, but there's all these other events that come up pretty quickly and can sneak up on you if you're not really planning ahead. So we've, you know, this will be my, I was trying to count, I think 9th Derby, working at Churchill. So you start to obviously get in the groove with things and, you know, you do your best to plan ahead. And with the nature of live events, things change pretty quickly and very last minute. And you kind of just learn to roll with the punches and go from there. So yeah, it is, to your point, it's great to not have necessarily a live race meet here in order to use that time pretty much to focus on Derby. But, you know, you kind of just have to keep that momentum rolling, which is sometimes tough. You know, once you kind of end, if you have your big event at the end, you're like, yeah, you know, time to maybe take some time off or relax or whatever, but yeah, we kind of keep it moving for 2 more months, since that can get a little tough, but we're all in the same boat really over here. So it's, you know, it's kind of solidarity in that way where we just kind of do our best to help each other and, you know, have success with the race meet after Derby. So.
Talked about last minute changes, and I think, you know, I come from, you know, the NFL and the college side. Last minute changes to me are, oh, this player's out, they're injured, we have to pull them out of this video, or this has changed. What does that look like in your world, and can you give an example of one of the biggest last minute changes you had to do before a race?
Ooh, that's a really good question. For us, you know, it comes down to, so for Derby week, our big thing for my team is we do the Oaks and Derby programs. Oaks is the race day before Derby. It's the Phillies race. So the female horses have their race called the Kentucky Oaks, and that happens on the Friday, and then Saturday is Derby day. So, you know, we do our race programs. We can't do them any earlier than the Monday and Tuesday before Oaks and Derby. So we prep as much as we can. We get a bunch of ads together because really putting the program together is very much a puzzle. So we have to wait to see how many horses are in a race, and we get that from the racing office. And then it may be a 2-page race, followed by a 3-page race, followed by a 4-page race, followed by a 1-page race, just depending on how many horses are in the field. So you drop all that in and put all the, you know, the program ads, kind of how they fit and make like a puzzle. And then we've got things like, you know, mandatory inclusions for sponsors and things like that. So you kind of get all those pieces together in advance and then wait until the very last minute, because that's the way it kind of works, to put it all together, send it to print. And then after that, our team focuses really on helping out the social media side of things. So we're pretty small but mighty over here. So we step in to help with just like any live event social stuff that pops up. So I think for us, though, as far as like the biggest last minute changes, you know, I can think of times where, you know, with the Derby program, you know, for us, it's like the proofing is so, I take it very, very seriously. So, you know, if you find a spelling error, you have to start calling the racing office, which means then you got to make sure that they've got it fixed on their side and things like that. If there's an issue with like the name of a race or something, I can think of a time where that happened. You know, and other last minute changes for us, you know, like if we have, let's say, an example would be if we have like a ticketing gate change, like there was an Oaks 1 year where we had implemented a new entry policy and then that didn't seem to work out well. So we kind of had to pivot pretty quickly to make sure that Derby didn't have the same issue. So it's a lot of how do we support communicating that, you know, creating any graphics for social or email, and we're communicating out to guests to make sure that they, you know that the, you know, change is there. And, you know, it feels like everything always just happens so quickly. Like when you say, what are the last minute changes? Like, I feel like I do those all the time. You know, you kind of just get used to it. It's just that live event thing, you know, and it takes some adjustment, you know, from, you know, your examples. Like I have worked in corporate, and when I have worked in corporate, it was insane to me that I wouldn't see something in market for months. You know, like you would make something and you'd work on it, and it goes through so many processes, you know, just to get approved and printed and put out there, where, you know, you make the Derby program on a Tuesday, it's in people's hands on Thursday, you know, and it's a little stressful. I have a lot of anxiety around it, but, you know, it's great. Like you just see immediate results with the work you do, which is really, really unique, I think, to the sports world in general. And just with how fast paced we are, it's hard and weird in a different way to just like work on something, you know, for, you know, when you work at a, like a CPG company, for example, you may be working on that same project for over a year, you know, to build up to a release, where that's just not even the way it even begins, you know, here, because just you kind of have to go to the next thing and the next thing, and, you know, do your best to learn along the way and kind of optimize how you work and keeping it efficient and accurate so that there's very little error in what you put out there too.
I mean, what was that like for you? You mentioned that you worked in the private world, and I see that you kind of did that between stints at Churchill. You know, yeah. What was that like for you going from sports to corporate and then back to sports? I mean, what were some of the major differences beyond what you already mentioned, and what made you decide to go back into sports again? Because I feel like that's a leap that not a lot of people make once they go into corporate.
Yeah. And it's funny because I never even envisioned myself working in sports at all. I started doing, just out of college, I worked at a local hospital in their marketing department, and then went to a small agency that focused in healthcare marketing. So I kind of assumed that that was just going to be my path for some reason. In college, I worked at a doctor's office as a medical assistant. So it's like healthcare kept kind of like creeping in. So when I got the opportunity at Churchill, it was awesome because at the time there wasn't a designer on staff. So I started as our graphic design manager and really just kind of built that, you know, in-house presence for creative here that hadn't existed in a while. So that was a really cool opportunity. And then I went back to the private health insurance world, you know, in between that. And it was really just kind of driven by, maybe I need a change, you know, it's because, you know, like we said, the live event stuff can get a little kind of tricky. And when you kind of get those weird hours and stuff, and it was a lot of that kind of like, is this right? Is this wrong? And once I got there, I'm like, I'm bored. You know, I think I need that like push, you know, that the constant push that we get all year round with our different events and just the nature of kind of the calendar year being full with benchmarks along the way. I had a tough time kind of thinking about like, what are we working toward? Do we have like infinite time to work on things? That wasn't necessarily the case, but it felt like so much where I just really just do better kind of going through those lists, making sure we're, you know, everything's buttoned up for this thing, get that done, and then move on to the next thing, just in kind of that event life. And moving back was a great opportunity because I was able to kind of build a little bit of a team. So it wasn't just me as the solo creative. That's when I took on the director role and was able to bring in, you know, a couple of creatives to work on our team so that we can really do some of that planning as best we can. You know, it was tough as a single creative to think more than just what was on your plate that day, you know, and when there was not much more planning or, you know, kind of holistic creative thinking outside of just making sure everything got done. And, you know, I did good work, but it wasn't the most, you know, inventive, or you kind of got to the point where you're like, I just got to like change the date on this thing and move on to the next, you know, just kind of like get up to date for every year. So having the team, you know, it's not a huge team. It's just me and two creatives, but I can now think larger scale, look ahead, plan, and then let them do the design work and kind of stay focused as creatives in that way. So, and that was some stuff I learned from corporate. They had a bigger team there, and I saw kind of how those roles, impacted the day-to-day work. And I took some of that knowledge and experience thinking like, oh, we can be so much more impactful if we just had a few more people to just kind of help, you know, keep things rolling, where I can, you know, with my experience at the Derby and with the events and that kind of institutional knowledge, can kind of take it forward and think bigger and at least a little bit further ahead than I was doing before, when I was kind of just plugging along as best I could to make sure everything got done for the events and for the meets.
So just touching on your process there a little bit, you obviously have quite a few tent poles that are laid out for you along the way. When you're talking about doing more of the thinking, are you involved with more sponsorships or sales or other departments when you're going through that help you define what something should look like? Or are you out front ideating, how can we make adjustments or improve on what we did the last year?
It's a lot of both, really. We work, you know, I always say we service our clients, our internal departments. So those departments like sponsorships and sales and the racing team and those folks. And it's a mix. I know what to anticipate. You know, I know when we annually create condition books for horse racing. So I know the timelines of when things happen. And a lot of times I kind of reach out first and say, hey, remember we got, you know, the condition books coming up, or hey, we got the program, you know, wrap for September meet. Like, let's, you know, get these things. And then, so that's, you know, kind of meeting them where they are in that way, because, you know, everybody's got all of their things to do. And a lot of our design timelines do drive and help assist keeping timelines together for some of the other departments, because, you know, we live in, we do a lot of digital, but we really do a whole lot of print, which is a little unusual for, I think, these days. Because programs are just a key part of coming to a day at the races. They will never go away. People want to have something in their hand, flip to the next page, jot down, you know, their picks and those things. And it's just something that is tangible that people take away every time they come. Tickets, you know, especially the Derby, it's an event you may only ever come to once. And some people, it's their bucket list event. And so, you know, you get a paper ticket that's, you know, kind of commemorative and something you can take away. But those things have lead times. You know, if you have to think it, okay, when, if we're distributing tickets on this date, that means we need to send them to print by this date, which means we need to design them by this date. So it's kind of helping people guide those work back schedules so that we meet those timelines, you know, because they don't, you know, not everybody works in the or lives in the world of printing and design and kind of lead times and how those things function. And so helping those departments kind of keep on track with those things. And it helps me so that I can, you know, at least try to get ahead of some stuff. And, you know, we don't have anything sneak up on us when we could have been really proactive. So it's a lot of that, just kind of meeting with them. And a lot of times they'll, I mean, and it's the other way around too. Sometimes they initiate work and come to me and say, hey, we've got, you know, we want to send a postcard out to promote, you know, this new sales area that we have built, and we want to, you know, promote to these people. So, you know, I don't know exactly everything initiatives they have going on, but we do keep a really big open line of communication. And, you know, I pride myself on being able to keep those relationships really strong. I think it's really important to kind of understand, especially when you're not working with creatives, you're working with, you know, people who may just be like running the event for the day or selling or making sure the racing, you know, side of things is going smoothly. So they don't see kind of the same things I see. So trying to get an understanding of all aspects of the company and how that works, just so that I can kind of meet people where they are and get everybody set up for success.
It's interesting that you talk, it sounds like you wear a lot of hats.
Yes.
which fits with the Kentucky Derby, right?
exactly.
I had to throw something corny in there.
Yeah, you got to talk about hats. That's important.
So just hearing you talk about ticketing to all the way down to social media and programs, there's a lot of different formatting.
Yes.
How do you and your team approach you know, like a look, do you go into, like, does the program look and feel trickle down to what you're executing for social for that race day, or how do you approach that?
So it is, you know, and we do have different approaches, especially to our different audiences and for our different events. Our audience for the Derby is not the same as maybe those folks that come here on a Wednesday in the fall. You know, those may be your more traditional horse fans, though, you know, they're your handicappers, or there's someone who maybe a lot of times we get a lot of groups. So it could be someone coming in from, you know, they may have had a group sale and they aren't in town, or they're part of, we have a Derby museum that's right next door to us. And a lot of times they come and visit the museum and then come to a day at the races. And it's like their only time coming to Churchill. So you're talking to a lot of different people, and the Derby, you know, is really, you're talking to a different, that's not just the race, but it's also a big lifestyle approach too, because you mentioned hats. You know, it's not just, you know, the sport is horse racing. If the race didn't exist, we wouldn't have this event, but you know, there are so many other elements, like coming and drinking a mint julep, wearing your hats, you know, what is the experience like? So, you know, this social media focuses a lot on that, you know, what is kind of, what do you see and hear and those sorts of things when you're at the track. The program, you know, we treat it in a way where it's got some editorial content for, you know, just kind of static for Derby. And we refresh that every year. We change the covers and those sorts of things. We also have a different event mark every year. So that influences some of the design too. We have different colors that are implemented with the event mark. So we kind of incorporate those and how those kind of fit into the commemorative aspect of coming for that particular year and looking like that particular year's logo and look and feel in that way. So it does vary, you know, just from that perspective. We have visual standards, but they're different too between Churchill Downs and Derby. We have different colors. The Derby is red and gold. Churchill Downs is more of like a green and black. So, you know, the Derby may feel a little more luxurious and elevated in some of the design, where a day at the races is a little more approachable, perhaps. The Derby tends to be a little more aspirational. So, you know, it's kind of looking at who, first of all, which, you know, what are we communicating specifically and to whom? Because that also changes some of the look and design too. If you're, you know, promoting a general admission sale, that is different than if you're promoting perhaps an indoor dining seat that's for Derby. Those are very different price points and very different experiences versus going to the infield, where it's a little much more casual and a bit more of a party. So you really have to kind of look at first what it is you're communicating and who it's for. And then that kind of trickles down from there. The program goes to everybody, and it goes to people who aren't even here. Folks order them for their Derby parties. They're sold kind of offsite because people use them to bet the races at home. And they're big, you know, the offsite sales have grown quite a bit for Derby because, you know, hosting a Derby party is its own experience on its own. You know, what does that look like? Kind of creating that at-home Derby experience. So the program tends to kind of just be really informational and really play into and elevate what are those Derby traditions, because the event is almost 150 years old and it's the longest continuously run sporting event in the country. So we have a lot of traditions and a lot of history, and, you know, leaning into that is always something that people are very interested in, just, you know, because it's been around for such a long time.
When you're thinking of, you know, the design, the feel, all those things, how do you balance that tradition? Because there is so much of it while trying to keep evolving and, you know, making something new and fresh, that obviously has to be a fine line to walk.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because some of the traditions haven't changed a whole lot. You know, the wearing a hat, the hats may look different, but wearing a hat is something that people have done, you know, since pretty much the dawn of the Derby. And it's, you know, evolved into such a thing that you know, for both males and females, you know, so it's kind of showing a lot of, you know, we've really played into kind of, especially, you know, on social channels, like then and now, you know, what was it like then and what was it like now? You know, what is it, you know, mint juleps and signage, there's those like weird little things that you don't, maybe not everybody notices, but we have done some playful things with kind of showing, you know, juxtaposed pictures. Even we did a calendar a few years ago that was really neat, where we found old photos that had a from, you know, let's say it's the first turn. That's kind of our, for us, that's our big, you know, it's the picture of the horses riding the turn with the twin spires in the background. You know, what did a first turn shot? Those existed also in, you know, the early 1900s. And we did some cool kind of playful things where we showed what those vantage points were like, you know, 100 years ago versus current. So I don't think we ever forget where we came from and the traditions. I think that plays heavily into just the kind of intrigue of the Derby in general. And, you know, the industry has evolved to some degree too. You know, betting is a, you can do it from home, you know, that's a totally different experience than it used to be. You just had to come to the track and buy your ticket. So it's, I think, has a much bigger reach than it used to, which is awesome. You know, you can bring in any fan from, you can sit at your house and, you know, bet from your phone and, you know, get involved in the racing without necessarily being here. And that's where, you know, some of those, like, you know, a Derby party and those things, like, it's not just coming to the Derby. It's what is the Derby like, you know, around the nation and the world. It's, you know, we've got, you know, a international presence as well with some of the horses that come in. So it's, you know, just thinking about that scope and the reach, it's not just, you know, coming to the event. It's how does that event perceived everywhere else too.
You talked a little bit about the long running of the races, almost to 150 years. And unlike some other events where, whether they had fans or had to make adjustments, you've been able to run the Derby and your races during the pandemic. But how did you make adjustments to be able to pull those off while still entertaining fans?
Yeah. So just like, yeah, every sporting event, everybody last March had to make some tough decisions about how that, and by March we're, you know, in the thick of Derby. We are, you know, tickets are ordered, you know, everything's pretty much, you know, kind of full steam ahead. So, you know, it was, you know, a challenging decision to move it, but we were fortunate in that the nature of our sport, we were able to race, you know, we only took a small pause. I think it was like mid to late May, we were able to start racing again without fans, but, you know, with, and obviously with some other health and safety adjustments, you know, for jockeys and that sort of thing. So we were able to fortunately keep things kind of rolling through our spring meet generally. And then we moved the Derby to September of 2020. So we, you know, it still is a continuously run event. There was a, I think it was World War II was the last time it got kind of bumped. So due to, you know, the different wartime efforts and that sort of thing, that I believe bumped the Derby the year of world, you know, during the World War II. So they, you know, it's not unheard of happening, you know, moving the Derby. It hasn't always been on the first Saturday in May, but it's always been an annual event. So it was really important to do as much as we could to keep that tradition rolling. So we ended up having the Derby in September without fans and, you know, being able to run the race and do, you know, the traditional things that we do to the best that we could with the nature of the pandemic. But it gave us the opportunity because, you know, in May, everybody, I think, was feeling pretty nostalgic, especially like the city of Louisville gets very different around Derby time because it's just a citywide, you know, embracing of the day, you know, and it's a huge piece of the economy and with all the travel and all of the things that people come in and do around the city during that time. So I think it was, you know, everybody was feeling a little nostalgic for the Derby around May 1st. So they did play a replay of the Derby on NBC last year. And we did a like Derby at Home initiative where we really kind of, you know, we asked people to show us their best Derby at Home, you know, Derby outfits and kind of engage in some of those Derby traditions, you know, we did some live streams of how to make a mint julep and all of that kind of stuff so that people could safely enjoy the Derby while they were at their house and, you know, keep some of that relevance of, you know, because it's so tied to that first Saturday in May. It's, you can't really pass by it, you know, in it and not do something Derby related. And it was really cool to see that so many people were really like missing it and, you know, ready to be part of that kind of Derby experience, even at home, even if we couldn't come here. And then we kind of got to do it again in September, since, you know, we had the race, but fans weren't on site. So it was kind of that same sort of deal where we were like, show us how you're celebrating at home, but also here's what's happening here at the track, like some great racing and that sort of thing. So it was kind of the Derby at home was a little bit of a dry run for when we later had the Derby race, but also without fans. So, and it's kind of carried on, you know, the Derby at home, you know, it kind of is part of that Derby party experience. So it's been something that we've been able to take forward, because there's always, not everybody can make it to the track. So there's always people celebrating at home and watching the Derby and wagering and that sort of thing. So how do we kind of incorporate that lifestyle element, even when we didn't have fans here at the track?
I want to talk a little bit about, we talked about the tradition and keeping it alive, but I want to talk about tradition and how it influences your work on the creative side. I used to work at a very tradition-rich institution in Notre Dame, right? Different tradition. Yeah. But sometimes that tradition was extremely helpful on the creative side, and sometimes it was a hindrance. Do you find yourself utilizing that tradition in your work, or do you find yourself having a hard time kind of bucking that tradition sometimes when you want to move away from it?
I think more than anything, we do lean into it a lot and use it in our work, because it really drives, you know, those traditions, like, you know, the mint juleps and hats and those sorts of things, they aren't going anywhere. You know, the garland of roses and the trophy and kind of how that's all presented. But, you know, it is sometimes, you know, thinking of, you know, how does that look in the future? It's definitely more of a gradual evolution than kind of like bucking the system, because we don't want to undermine at all those things that we've kind of built towards, in the sense, you know, of the race and the experience. And, you know, even when we've tried kind of some different things, it's like people tend to just really latch on to kind of like, you know, they want their paper tickets, they want their paper program. So, you know, those are the things you kind of have to take, you know, the glassware, julep glasses, we put those out every year. You know, it's kind of, those are the things people collect and keep. So, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of trouble that I have kind of deviating from the tradition, because we appreciate it so much. And it's something that really kind of defines a lot of who we are, and, you know, kind of taking that forward as best we can. I think we'll have some really cool opportunities when we get around 150. You know, that's a really big banner year. So, you know, it's cool. I've been lately looking back kind of like, what did we do around the 100th Derby? You know, I wasn't here for that, but so I've been, you know, kind of doing a little bit of research to see what kind of interesting things were done around that time, since that was another big, you know, banner moment in Derby history. So we have those opportunities, but I think it's, you know, it's hard to kind of separate the two. So I just tend to lean in, because people really enjoy, they really enjoy the traditions, and, you know, it's not something that really hinders a whole lot of what we do in general. And it provides a lot of content. You know, there's, you always want to show mint juleps, and you always want to show hats and different fashion. And those are the things that evolve. You know, the fashion changes every year, and that's a really cool thing to show kind of how that evolves over the decades too. We've lately been, over the past couple of years, actually digitizing a lot of and preserving a lot of our photography. So there's photos that we've never even seen. They've literally probably never been developed. That was many negatives of photos that had never been developed or scanned. So we're seeing pictures that we've never seen before that are inspiring a lot of things too. Cause it's like, man, I had no idea that happened, you know, or that these people came to the Derby and, you know, that sort of thing. So it's, you know, we're looking back. I find myself looking back a lot because, you know, I don't want those things to necessarily be lost, you know, in translation over time. And they're kind of being rediscovered, which is pretty neat too.
I mean, what is that process like, trying to, you know, deal with an archive that is that deep, and to, you know, digitize it like that? I've dealt with a lot of archives that did not go 100+ years deep. I mean, how do you even begin on a project like that?
It's been very long, you know, it seems like forever. We've been kind of, you know, it was something we thought of a few years ago, probably more like 4 or 5 years ago. You know, how do we take these on and start to, because we were getting into a situation where they were like actually deteriorating, like the negative paper or, you know, physical pieces were not holding up. And, you know, we made a really, I think, smart decision to work, you know, in partnership with the Derby Museum, because they are the keepers of the Derby history and the archive. And it felt like a no-brainer, like, let's move these with them. They can store them appropriately and tag them and sort them in a way that like is actually meant to be done with an archive. And so we've had an archivist over there working through the pictures. So it's been a really cool process. And it's one where, you know, I just kind of, I know my strengths and it's not, I appreciate the history, but you know, I'm not an archivist. The, you know, the historic approach to those photos is so important in making sure that, you know, we may not know who this trainer is that won the Derby or standing in the winner's circle for a Derby of a particular year, maybe even what they looked like, you know, so doing like someone's there to do that research and make sure that everything is being appropriately, you know, tagged, you know, because the system's only as good as your metadata, really. So otherwise you're just looking through hard drives, which is what I've been doing for a while. And so, you know, and it's great to just kind of discover those. She sends us, you know, she got kind of in the habit of sending us what she calls photo finds. And it was just kind of like an accumulation of pictures she discovered that she thought were really interesting over the month, you know, a month's time. And you see all kinds of things, like, you know, all kinds of interesting things that you just had no idea. And it's just evolved so much. The infield experience is not the same, but kind of is, you know, you see some, you're like, oh, they even did that back then. So, you know, it's kind of cool to see how some things have changed. And even, I think even more cool to see how, what things haven't, you know, like that's just been, you know, the infield's been the way it is since the 70s or something. So, you know, standing in line for a mint julep's pretty similar as it is now. And they had, you know, rocket men, they may have dressed different, you know, had different, hats and stuff on, but we still have people that go around and sell mint juleps. So it's kind of cool to see that some of those traditions and kind of just like general experience things haven't changed a whole lot over the course of time. And I think that's how we, you know, retain a lot of Derby fans. There's people who have, you know, they're like, I've been to the Derby, every Derby since 1976 or whatever. And there's a reason they keep coming back. And I think it's part of kind of the experience that you get just being a part of the crowd and, you know, sipping your mint julep and, you know, seeing the twin spires in front of you. It's just, you know, part of people's kind of, you know, A to Z experience of coming to the racetrack that day.
Well, I mean, you talk about the way that it's just so central to Louisville, you know, during race week, and it just becomes this like citywide event. I know that you went to University of Louisville. Yeah. You know, what was, did you have experience with the Derby at all before you came to work at Churchill?
Not really. I grew up actually outside of Cincinnati in Northern Kentucky. So a suburb of Cincinnati. So we, you know, I was pretty, you know, familiar, and I was never really, I've always said, I'm like, I was never a sports person. I'm not competitive. It's like, I used to never understand how people would be so upset when their team lost and, you know, kind of those sorts of emotions. I'm like, man, you know, everybody had fun. That's usually was my kind of approach to things. So, you know, my first, I think, team that I felt ownership with, you know, from a personal perspective was when I came to U of L. I'm like, oh, this is what it feels like to actually like be a part of something. You know, and when I came to Louisville, I basically just never left. It's not far. It's about an hour and a half from, you know, Cincinnati. So it's close. And the only racetrack before I come to Churchill was Keeneland, which is another great racetrack here in Kentucky. So, and those are two very different places. So it was cool to kind of see the, you know, just the comparison of those experiences. And then, you know, obviously when you get to Louisville, the Derby, everything revolves around that. Like, you know, I always had heard, which I never knew if this was actually true, but that they always wanted exams to be over before Derby weekend so that every, you know, all the college kids were able to kind of get out of town before, you know, all the tourists came in just so that they could kind of ease the crowds of the city and stuff. It always seemed to work out that way, but it felt like kind of a word of mouth thing, kind of a lore or something. But, you know, it's, you know, kids get off school on Oaks Day. It's considered a like free, you know, a day off for teachers, and schools are shut down because I imagine, you know, partly it's, I'm sure, just a traffic control thing. But the other thing is everybody wants to either be at the track or watching the races. So, you know, it just kind of drives a lot of just the general function of the city, just the nature of it, you know, being that first weekend in May. So, yeah, I think I call Louisville my hometown now. I've been here for well over 10 years at this point. And I think the Derby is kind of running through my veins. And it's tough. You know, I left it for 4 months and I came right back. So it sucks me in pretty quickly. And it was definitely noticed when I wasn't kind of living that day-to-day life when I was here.
What was that first Derby experience like for you? First time you were a part of it?
Well, I started in March. So we were there, like it was, that train was plowing down the track, you know, no stopping it. So it was cool to see, you know, at that point it was a lot of observing, you know, and just, you know, at the time I helped a lot with actually some of the live event stuff during the day. We, you know, pulled in some of the marketing professionals to help the event. And that's still the case, you know, to some degree, but, you know, it was really cool just to see, you know, we were able to kind of function with some of the broadcast side of things, which I'd never done before, and how, you know, a live event is and counting down to when you're live on camera and that sort of thing. So I learned some tricks and skills in the kind of live event scope that year that I never thought I would ever learn, but it was really cool. Because for us, like I said, a lot of the design work, you know, the heavy lifting with the program is done, you know, 4 days before the event. So now we've gotten in the groove, like I said, with doing, helping social media, but, you know, we kind of step in and help with the, you know, live event execution stuff, you know, whenever that, you know, needs to happen. It's tough to, you know, learn the facility. I had no idea where I was going. This place is very large. So when you've only been here 2 months and you're being, you know, you're kind of tailing people around the track, just kind of trying to not get lost or get stuck somewhere. Cause, it's a big place. And, I think it takes you several years of working here to kind of figure out where everything is. So, you know, it was a lot of just that first Derby was just a lot of observing. And then it was, at the time too, I was new. So many of the departments didn't really engage a ton of work for me. They were kind of used to the way they were doing things. So it was a lot of, after that Derby, it was like, oh, Emily can help us with tickets and Emily can help us with this stuff. So, you know, by that next Derby, you know, we had pretty much started touching all the things that we do now, with, you know, helping ticketing and all of that stuff. So, and it's great because I love, being in-house in general as a creative, because you become a professional in that particular brand and the look and feel. And, you know, it's great to influence that too. And it's, you know, there's a lot of trust that's been earned in kind of being the steward of that brand and the visuals and putting it forward and in all of our kind of materials for everything. Because we do, you know, we have events outside of racing. People can have a wedding here. People can rent a space and have a corporate event. And, you know, that stuff requires marketing and graphic materials too, and promotion. So, you know, keeping those things throughout the year, you know, and carrying kind of that brand forward, even if you're not directly communicating the Derby specifically. You know, it's a lot of, this is where the Derby happens. So that's a very cool thing for people. And it's a really cool experience to come here any time of the year, just to kind of see the place where it all happens, I suppose. So, you know, it was a lot of learning and observing. And, you know, the thing I've always struggled with is, you know, I hate making mistakes. I know everybody hates it, but it like just actually destroys me. So it's like learning that, like, you know, it's a live event. Sometimes like a, you know, a miss here and there is not going to actually kill you. So, you know, it's a lot of kind of learning just in my own way of, you know, it's okay to be human and, you know, adapt forward. And, you know, sometimes you just don't learn that unless you're in it. And, being thrown in it, I think, was the best way to learn all that. So I'm glad I started pretty close to the event, because I think I would have gotten in my head a little bit too much about all the things to be done at that time. It was just like, here we are, you know, and keep it rolling. So it was interesting, but it always seems to be the same, you know, year, the feelings kind of happen. And I always get very anxious after the program gets sent. Like, I have a process and some things I'm like, I always have to like take a walk the next morning or go visit the horses on the backside to kind of clear my head and, you know, say like, you know, you did everything correctly. It's fine. So, you know, you're so much harder on yourself than other people are. And that's something I've kind of, you know, been learning along the way, that, you know, I'm proud of the work I do and my team does. And, it's, you know, not, it doesn't go necessarily unnoticed, but it's okay if something doesn't go your way either. So.
I think it's interesting to hear you talk about not necessarily having a team, and when you have so many races, you're just happy for the people that win. It seems like that it's not necessarily like you're here rooting for one particular. I guess I'm interested to hear from you what now that you've been there, you're saying this is your going on your ninth Derby.
I think so. I'm not the best at math, so like.
but you also talked about how large the stadium is, the arena. What do you enjoy doing most on a race day? Is there something in particular that you go, I have to hit this? I know there's a parade beforehand, and you have, you know, all these different things that are more behind the scenes that maybe don't get seen on TV during the glitz and glam of the Derby, and people haven't been to races and some of those kinds of things. So I'm curious to hear from you about that.
Yeah. Every horse race has kind of the same stuff that happens, whether it's Derby and everybody, and, you know, Derby, it's a lot of it's televised, you know, you're seeing the post parade, you're seeing the riders up when the jockeys get on the horses to go out to the track, and you're seeing them load the gates and, you know, those types of things that happen. And that happens, but they always call riders up before any horse race. It doesn't matter if it's the third race of the day on a Thursday or right before the Derby. So it's interesting, you know, when you think about it that way, it's like, you know, they're there to just, you know, it's a huge, huge accomplishment to get to the Derby. But there's still those kind of like benchmarks that happen before every horse race that happens before the Derby. As far as something for me, you know, I always kind of have to pinch myself, because we're so accustomed, like a race day is just a work day, you know, to some degree, like, oh yeah, if we're out there racing today, you kind of almost like, it's just kind of happens, especially when you're in the middle towards the end of a meet, you're so accustomed to seeing the horses out there and hearing people cheer and that sort of thing, that you almost have to, like, I have to kind of pinch myself and be like, people actually want to come to the place that I work, and that's really cool. And some of these, you know, things that I'm accustomed to for every horse race is something brand new and interesting for people who maybe have never been here before. I think before the Derby, I'd say like my favorite tradition is kind of when they're during the post parade, when they're all walking out to the racetrack, there's kind of some, you know, there's some great spots to watch that from, you know, kind of behind the scenes that you may not necessarily get from kind of your regular seat. So you've learned kind of, people always kind of have their favorite spots as employees to like watch the Derby. And there's a lot of superstition too, you know, different trainers have different spots where they like to watch the race. So there's kind of those like nuances that happen there. But, you know, I think for me, you know, my biggest role in the daily racing is getting that program done. So most race days I'm doing a program. We do the programs 2 days out from every race day. So if, you know, for today, for example, we'll have to do the program for Sunday. So you're kind of already like, today's already happened, you know, in the world of the program. I've already seen the races, the program's been put in, and today's when the program physically arrives and people use it, but you're already thinking ahead to the 1 and 2 days. So, you know, making sure I get that done and plan ahead for those next meets. But, you know, I honestly need to get out more from my office, and it's great. You kind of forget, like, I can just pop out and watch a race and come back, you know, because they're not long. They're usually about 2 minutes. So it's a pretty quick thing to do. And it's neat just to kind of when you remind yourself like, oh, I'm at this, like, there's a thing happening right now while I'm here at work. Cause it's a long day too. It's unique in that sense that, you know, you can come to the racetrack and you might be here for 4 or 5 hours. You know, the first race is at 12:45 on most days, and it may not end till after 5 o'clock, depending on how many races are there. So people come and spend a lot of time here, and there's a lot of kind of ebbs and flows to the day as well as, you know, between races. And that's when you go and get your drinks and get your, you know, get your bets in and cash your tickets and all that stuff. And that's really important around Derby too, because that's when kind of the live show comes into play, keeping people entertained. And, you know, with the crowd being so large on Derby, you know, there's a lot of experience. If you're in the infield, you have no idea what's going on the front side or at the red carpet. And so showing some of those things that are happening at the track in that time kind of helps immerse people into what's going on in this. We're all in the same place, but, you know, just it's so large. There's just totally different experiences going on all over the place.
You know, I think the last thing that I have is just, you know, for you, what advice do you have for someone who wants a role like yours, for someone who's maybe getting into this field, you know, either in college and is interested in it, you know, is right out of college, or even, you know, mid-career like you? What would you suggest to them to set them up for a success in a role like what you have?
Yeah, I think the thing that set me up for success the most is being willing to do stuff that maybe isn't in, you know, just in the creative sphere, you know, of a day-to-day job. I've learned the most a lot in kind of just like getting out there and, you know, observing what's happening. If you get, you know, sometimes in live events, you get pulled to help with the poster giveaway or something, you know, like don't take those moments for granted. Because I think that's where I've learned the most about our customers from those situations where I've had to kind of help them in real time, you know, or, you know, getting out there. Yesterday I had someone's like, where can I get a mint julep? And you almost have to remind, okay, like, oh yeah, somebody, like, they've probably never been here before. Like, sure, let me show you where you can get that. So I think, you know, in this capacity, it's so different than kind of coming in, working your corporate, you know, more 9-to-5 type of job. And you kind of have to remind yourself that, like, this is a space, you know, for any sport that people make a special trip. They maybe save money to come. They are ready to spend the day there and they want to just have a really good time and a good experience. And I think knowing that side of it really plays into the work that you put out, because you can start to think from those perspectives, because so much of what we do is to help guide and inform the customer. You know, if you're getting your tickets, there's a brochure that comes with it. And in the brochure are all the maps and, you know, the FAQs and the questions. And, you know, once you learn kind of those nuances of whatever venue or sport it is, I think it influences your work, you know, in a really strong way that you can just be a better steward to those customers. Because without the athletes and without the fans, there's not a whole lot else, you know, that kind of drives the sport. So keeping both ends of the spectrum happy and just understanding them. And sometimes that's just like getting out there and, you know, you may kind of, I remember I was like, I can't believe, you know, sometimes it's not fun. You know, sometimes you're like, oh, I'm staying in the heat. I'm giving out posters. I'm giving out free calendars or whatever. But that's when you interact with people and you learn, you know, okay, you know, I may have made materials to promote this poster giveaway, but this would have gone, maybe can be improved if I include this information in the ad or the flyer or whatever, based on your experience with it. So I think just, you know, being open to saying yes to kind of some unique asks, because I think that happens a lot in sports, you know, and trying to take those as, you know, opportunities to learn about, if nothing else, about your sport, about your venue, about the customers and guests that come and engage, I think can do nothing more than improve, you know, how you communicate and display your brand and, you know, all of the materials that they see moving forward, whether it be video, social, you know, ads, all those things. You know, it's all to kind of drive, you know, attendance and to keep your fan base really strong So it's just kind of, those are not experiences that you get, you know, in a traditional corporate environment, you know, getting out there and engaging with, you know, in real time with the people that are holding the program you made 2 days ago and kind of seeing how they interact with it. There's just some, you know, I kind of walk around and watch people flip. And if I see people looking at the maps, I'm like, okay, so I know they're actually using those. That's great. You know, or you make all these ads and you see people rating them. You're like, cool, they're reading the ads too. So, you know, sometimes you get so consumed with, you know, your work that you're doing, it's cool to kind of go out and see like, oh, this is how it's actually being utilized in the end. And that I think adds some inspiration to it too, because it's not for nothing at all. It's very much part of their experience in one way or another.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.